Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Good afternoon, and it's a Wednesday, right?
Oh, Friday. It
doesn't feel like a Wednesday. No, literally, Ahmed, it really does not feel like a Wednesday.
Yeah, it is a Wednesday.
Even for all the networking I just made, and guess what? Two of them were lovely numbers.
No kidding.
I'll leave the imagination hanging.
Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, coming to you all the way from the Capital Dutton Eagle FM studio here in Windhoek. And as always, your drive time show, we always have exciting topic to keep you company wherever you are tuned in from, whether you're tuned in at home or abroad. Fingers crossed you are not tuned in from the Middle East. But if you are, just, you know, just stay safe and follow the regulations. As you can imagine, that every government has in place for situations or eventualities like that. And I think it's safe to say we got a little taste of it during the COVID-19 pandemic of, this whole, nationwide type of, lockdown where some of your rights or most of them that you always run around with, especially the right to travel, as temporarily, suspended. And that's for your safety. Yeah. Yes. Must be suspended for your safety. Otherwise,
Now, for your safety.
For your safety.
For our safety.
For our safety. During the COVID-19, that was for our safety. During the COVID-19, that's when, COVID-19 lockdowns, that's where I learned reverse psychology is real.
How so?
Because when people were told to stay in, everyone wanted to go out. And where people were told, okay, now the lockdowns are over, please, you can go out. No one was joking as much as the people were.
As much as they are now.
Yeah.
However, do you know what's the most funny thing part? Funniest part is that you now see a lot more activities around cycling and jogging in competition format now through a whole sports calendar. I know if we had to drag, HD here in studio with us, he'll basically confirm that since he's also an avid cyclist himself. I don't know if he's trying to compete for strongmen of Namibia, but... we'll keep that joke for another time.
That's right.
Yeah. So, he'll probably confirm that specific scenario, Helmut. But you are right. I asked the question because I wanted to know in what scenario you're going to pitch the reverse psychology.
The reverse psychology. Yeah.
Dimension. And also what I saw happen during COVID was the reverse psychology was also don't drink. And everybody literally the best thing they did was drink.
And we also learned that before you get married, choose carefully, because people, turns out people were leaving the house to go to work for two reasons. One, to go to work, two, to get out from their spouse. Because during the lockdown, when they were forced to be in the same environment for an extended period of time, domestic violent cases
were... People were not communicating, but they were talking through their other actions,
The love of my life, my behind. Now, look, the thing is, most of this...
We're gonna be the result of us not being able to be married now after 50 years from now, ne?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll probably be dead by then, but yeah.
Yeah. As much as I wanna reach 2100, I don't wanna make it there when I can barely see anything, let alone walk.
Yeah.
So, 2100 can stay.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So, let's talk about, now that we, I think this, today's report, which basically looks at the threats facing Namibia's media landscape, this one goes mostly to us. By us, I mean
private sector,
yeah. And also you and me.
Yes.
Like literally, because, if there are people in this country that are very good at exercising the freedom of speech, it's us with these two microphones that will put us in trouble. Look.
You know what's the worst part? People listen to us. I just met someone now who literally said, yeah, I like the interesting conversations you guys have. Yeah. And then I was like, okay.
You find that interesting? Thank you very much.
The face was found. You know, I tried to blend in. I tried to hide my face. But the face was found, you know. And obviously also the CEO of NCLSD, who went and told an audience. No, he's one of Namibia's foremost science journalists. I was like, what is this auntie doing?
Now I have to explain science.
What is this auntie doing? You know, I just have my basic knowledge. Let's just keep it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I find myself, you know, at least personally, every time that I just listen to some of the, you know, the things that we talk about, and I listen to just different, mediums of communication, you know, in relations to media in Namibia.
Mm.
That's from your, you know, from your radio stations, TV stations. I'll be watching maybe a program or two and then just listen to one program or two. Just, and because a lot of them are, you know, I run most of them, especially, radio, you know, radio presenters. Most of them, the local ones I run into them on social media. That's on TikTok. They like to do live stream. And I'm listening to all these things that, of course, most of them, let me just say all that I've run into, they blend music and conversation. Yeah. Now.
Yeah, we're gonna shred a few competitors in this discussion. We don't care.
Yeah, it's not us. It's the report.
No, literally. I don't care if we do it because primarily we have to be a little smug, Helmut, in terms of what we offer and what we do.
Here's one thing I've come to learn. Ever since I started, listening to other radio stations and, other radio presenters and other, you know, TV presenters reading a lot of news articles, I've come to learn I really must behave.
Why?
Because if I lose my job at Eagle FM, no one is going to hire me. Because of the things I talk about. There's too much freedom going on. I came across one who seems to be, doing his presentation. He kept looking on one side. I think he was working with some sort of a teleprompter. That's just my conclusion because he kept looking in one corner, which I was like, "What on earth is going on here?" But now the thing is, the conversation type, like the one that we do home run here.
Mm.
I'm yet to basically come across that. And for a lot of things like media, let me just say government documents like the National Council, National Assembly, Standing Committee Reports, Office of the Auditor General, I'm basically yet to come across, you know, a lot of people that are basically talking about that live on air. I actually ran into a few media, pardon me, personnel that told me that now for them on their platform, if a case is ongoing, they don't talk about it.
Which is supposed to
in media training.
Yeah.
I'm like,
what I also was trained.
Yeah.
Is that you can't have a discussion that sort of like leaves it open to the public, the court of public opinion.
WhatsApp qualified lawyers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, what you can do is you wait for proceedings to start. This is how the training works. Let's say it's a murder.
Yeah.
The event was reported to the police by said victim, or let's say aggrieved parties. You can report from the police's
perspective, yeah.
Crime report,
mm-hmm.
and then you can report from when it reaches the court stage. But mm-hmm. if you're now going to be one of those clever, what we see in the dramatic crime dramas on America and in Europe, where the journalist decides now to go do the police's work between the reporting the case and between the thing reaches the court.
Yeah.
Now they go investigate who is the suspect.
Who's the suspect? And now they're they're analyzing their own evidence.
That's what we're not supposed to do.
That point of view is exactly why I like reports.
Yeah. That's what we're not supposed to do as media. And the second thing, most crucial thing is, if it reaches the court, don't make your conclusions.
It's an ongoing proceeding.
Yes. Report as it's going on. Now, I understand why some outlets, like you explained now, they fear some sort of, what you call it, legal challenge.
Yeah.
The thing is, Helmut, what you and I had already qualified is, the moment it reaches the court, it's public.
That's one. And look, one thing I got from that statement was that, I totally understand that point of view. And I'm saying I totally understand that because of one thing. Mm. That's, because of how easy it is to jump to conclusion for a lot of people when they're listening to some of these things.
Yeah.
Take for example, yesterday when we were looking at the performance report coming out of the Office of the Auditor General. Now that was a report that that has more like three main components: their observation, their conclusion, and recommendation. Okay. Everything is provided for. That's why I like to say.
Even though recommendation and conclusion was like on every page. That was the best part.
They didn't waste time.
I like the Auditor General's report. It goes. Even page one, there's a recommendation and conclusion.
That's where they started. NAMRA recommendation. Observation, recommendation, conclusion. Next. I'm like, yo, these guys are not pulling their
directorate of mining. Observation, recommendation, conclusion. It just goes like, and then you get into the meat. Of the subject.
And then you get the main conclusion.
Yeah.
Recommendation and conclusion. So, the good thing is, When I learned in 2023 that the genocide in Rwanda started, one of the things that contributed to the propaganda that led to the atrocities was a radio station. That's when I basically came to realize how important it is to keep regulations of media platforms. Now, just like everything else, you now have to find that sweet spot of regulating and giving that freedom of expression and freedom of speech.
Mm.
So this is where I think rights and responsibilities now come together for me. So the individual expressing themselves, because we have you and I that are expressing ourselves, and we have lawmakers in parliament, and their job is to find the sweet spot of giving us the right to express ourselves. Now they have to put that into law. Now their role is to draft laws that regulate our freedom of speech.
Mm.
And it must be regulated in a way that it does not trample over that freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And then the ball is passed to you and me. Now,
yeah.
When we are expressing ourselves, we also have to put in mind that we have responsibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Your like freedom.
Your freedom comes with responsibility.
It's not an open-ended. Untamed.
It's not an unregulated. Like, you know what? Just go wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just go to the studios to switch on the microphone and then start, insulting everyone that owes you money. That's not what you're supposed to do.
You know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
There was a guy I used to listen to. Okay, I listened to him through someone else who was training the Kwekwekova pronunciations. And it's on one of the national radio platforms specifically. Listeners would know which particular station I'm talking about. And between lunch, the guy comes on here between 12 and 1. Yeah, he's got like a 15-30 minute discussion, Amut. And then he goes on this like rant in some of his presentations of, if it's just before end of the month or just past end of the month, yeah, and then there's always a trend of certain themes.
Yeah.
So 5 days before payday and 5 days after payday, it's always there's a theme or there's a talking point of people that owe you money.
That's why I was laughing. If you want to talk to me directly. Someone was listening and going, if you want to talk me directly. Don't go through the corners.
And then somewhere in the middle of the month, there's always a talking point of community leaders who turn out not to be what they say they are.
Okay, that's crude.
But it always uses like this vague mechanism of talking.
Got to be if you're going to have so conversation.
He doesn't point directly, but it's usually
because you could easily get into trouble.
Now the worst part is
both legally and panchically.
Now the worst part is that you can literally time him, because literally every time
You can bet this time of the month is probably talking about it.
Yeah, it's going to be this theme.
The genocide in Rwanda, after I discovered that there was an unregulated, basically, I would think it's safe to call it unregulated because yeah. that's the only way it, you know, it was allowed to go on for, I think, a little over, you know, almost a year before, before the genocide in 1994.
Mm. And that was a station that literally began, it was like 2 years old.
Yeah, it was a station.
No, but it was like 2 years old.
Wait, wasn't that station like founded in 1993?
It was founded in 1993, almost a year.
It was founded in 1993. And those guys were just going on unregulated. And they were saying a lot of tribal tension. They were basically fanning the fence that, of tribal tensions, of hate crimes and everything that led to the 1994 genocide to some degree. Of course, there are a lot of political components involved, but that radio station also largely contributed. Now, you have to, every time that I go back to that story, it sort of like reminds me just how powerful media is when it comes to influence.
The one thing I'm still curious about, Helmut, about that station, I don't know if that station was government owned or was it like privately owned?
I haven't checked if it was privately owned.
I have a suspicion it was privately owned, but when we did, remember the origins of the East DRC conflict last year, mm-hmm. when we had the talking point, same time last year, the start of the year, when we did, what's really behind that East DRC conflict, I think it's like Radio Rwanda is its name, the station's name. They obviously give you like a synopsis if you read the Wikipedia entry.
Their Wikipedia page, yeah.
Yeah. It gives you a summary of the origins of the particular starting elements or the elements that began everything. Mm-hmm. But when they mention that radio station's name, I don't know if they precisely identify the ownership of the station because people or the historians would identify that the radio station was literally the starting point of all of this after the plane crash of the president of Rwanda at the time. They then start, transmitting or broadcasting those messages. And then when you look into the ownership, there's just almost nothing you almost get about the thing.
Yeah.
So the reason why I asked that, why I highlight that particular discussion is because we obviously in Namibia, we've got a mixed representation, meaning it's dominated in great contrast by state media, specifically like in our specific communication format or medium, which is radio, frequency based. And they are really like, the most resilient communication medium is still radio in this country, with its very strong and healthy, particular presence. I mean, I met a guy who set up his own radio station for Omaheke. He's based in Gobabis, and you could see it's a lot better than going with a newspaper or starting a newspaper with a printing press. Because the paper has to come from South Africa. So now you have to pay an import duties. Now you have to pay other particular taxes regarding manufacturing because you've got the manufacturing arm, but you've got this, other arm. A newspaper, technically, when you write the stories to designing and laying out the template is all manufacturing as well.
Eesh.
So you've got two sets of manufacturing that literally lead to the same particular product. But in the eyes of the audience or the eyes of the readership or the eyes of the consumer, to them it's one thing. They don't see. But if you break it up in terms of the inputs, you've got the media house who produces the content and designs the template and the printing press that literally receives the template and puts it on the paper. Through machines.
Are they like two different entities?
It's two different entities.
Oh, so it's not just one.
It that's why I said it looks like one thing, but they are literally two companies.
So it's like the printing is outsourced.
Well, you can say yes and no. Why I say yes and no is because printing has the capability of having a lot more functions to it, meaning you can print these retail pamphlets for retail stores.
Yeah.
You might have seen them in the newspapers.
Yeah, with their, you know, with their products and prices.
Exactly.
Everything.
The printing is done by the printing press. Distribution also as well. Because in some cases they give you like a bonus function in terms of saying, hey, listen, we can deliver to you and then you can distribute between your shops across the country. However, when you look at the paper, you cannot use recycled paper. And so many people have thrown at newspapers the idea of, why don't you just recycle? If you really are feeling the pinch of costs, why don't you just recycle your paper? Here's the downside. I just came from a circular economy discussion, Helmut, directly here to the studio.
Yeah.
The printing press, a newspaper, a magazine even, is the wrong business to think about a circular economy such scenario. Meaning, recycle, reuse, recycle, reuse, and what's the other R? The triple R?
Is it a reduce?
Yeah, reduce, reuse, and recycle. The three R's. A printing press is the wrong business.
So the recycle part is not
It's never going to be applicable. Why? Have you ever seen recycled toilet paper?
Not ones that
There's a company that manufactures it. How do you not know, Helmut?
Recycled.
Recycled toilet paper. Yeah.
Oh, recycled.
Recycled
newspaper.
People have not been able to hear me all day long, and to me it sounds like I'm speaking loud. Okay, I'll pick up it by a notch. Recycled toilet paper. If you've never seen recycled toilet paper, looks weird from the get-go. When you look at the texture, when you look at the presentation of the thing, but it serves the same purpose.
Again, I'm really trying to contain the comedian part of me. Recycled newspaper or recycled toilet paper?
Toilet paper. That's why I asked you, have you ever seen recycled toilet paper?
One more time?
Have you ever seen recycled toilet paper?
I'm hoping even if I have by accident, I'm hoping I have not. Recycled?
Okay, there's a Namibian brand that's sold in shops.
Yeah.
You will immediately see it because of its packaging. You will be able to pick up.
Yeah.
The last time that I remember talking to them, for their one-ply product, they had this recycled toilet paper product. Now, obviously, for them, they are trying to position a recycle, reduce, reuse template. But when you come to a platform like a newspaper. It's literally like the term that I also now heard, please don't laugh, Helmut, virgin materials or virgin minerals.
You don't say.
Listen, I'm trying to keep this as scientific as possible. People went silent now just in the audience when the moderator asked, is anyone here a virgin material? And everyone was just sitting there looking at.
Okay, what century are you in?
Are you trying to make a joke? Or what are you trying to do? So, when you look at the scenario, now that's literally the biggest cost, that paper. And then the electricity.
So for newspapers, the paper itself.
Yeah. Don't even go to magazines, Helmut. If you go look at the magazines today in the shops, they price, most of them are about $50.
Yeah.
An edition.
Yeah.
Why? Feel the product. Look at the product.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the cost.
Magazines are somewhat a little, glossy.
It's the glossy paper, the glossy pages.
Yeah.
Now you don't know if it is a plastic kind of material or if it's paper that literally has a coating on it, which in many cases it is, like the cover. Cover would be the glossy cover.
Yeah.
So I know we deviated a lot, but contained within this report literally focuses into the particular sectoral knowledge that I've built up, meaning the legacy knowledge that I have, that when you analyze threats to media, and I know we're starting backwards to front, and I know you started with the expressions, the freedom of expression discussion, and also the pivotal role that media plays. Now, when you put all these particular scenarios where a threat is possible in a SWOT analysis, but the SWOT analysis, unfortunately, does not show you strengths. It's either the strengths are there, but they're like the font sizes, but like that tiny, you know, they almost look like read the fine print tiny. Yeah. And then, oh yeah, we've got a quick ad coming up on us, dear listeners, and we'll come back after this.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of five. That means we still have an hour to look at the report that is that's coming out of. I just learned that. South Africans are always having our back, right? Intel Watch.
What do you mean?
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, is that an organization? I just thought it was like a fancy logo that they slapped on the report.
It's South African based, from what I gather.
Okay, I failed in one of my very few verification sort of like exercises, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a civil society. From what I gather, it's a civil society organization based in South Africa, and mapping threats to media. Mapping threats to media, and this is just Namibia based. Like everything else, one thing that was pointed out by the UN Secretary General in his 22, you know, priorities for 2026 was how things are escalating. And one thing that's in the world of politics, how everyone seems to be turning their backs on international law and just going, you know, playing cowboy, especially those ones with a large military strength, you know, with a strong military. And this is something that's been pointed out by a lot of experts with regards to how democracy seems to be declining. And I think we talked about this either late last year or early this year, how democracy, the state of democracy seems to be declining, and this is globally. I didn't put two and two together when we were talking about the decline of democracy globally, but now that we have this report, it's kind of makes sense, because wherever democracy is declining, every aspects that are associated with democracy are also obviously going to be in decline. Human rights being one of them. Now, the part of your human rights is is your right to express yourself, and that then spills into media freedom. So it's a sort of like this report, if you ask me, is one that is a domino effect coming out of the decline in the quality, you know, in the state of democracy globally. Can also be attributed to that. Now, Namibia has been on the top chart when it comes to media freedom. But even us from the look of things, we all have serious concerns with regards to the state of media freedom in the country. Yeah. When I basically picked this topic from the planner and proposed it as a subject for today, I did not get a full picture of just how broad the threats are, because I was thinking of it more in terms of mis and disinformation. Because every time that the threat to press freedom is, you know, to to press freedom is discussed, it's more often discussed in terms of how especially with the advancement of technology, it's becoming more and more difficult for a lot of consumers of this content to basically tell the difference between what's true and what's AI generated.
Mm.
I think this is one of those reasons why radio is going to stand the test of time, because it's kind of difficult to fake. Because you can easily AI generate a video.
Yeah.
Now, on radio, that becomes a little bit tricky. At least, well, you can't do that without your boss finding out and asking you, why the heck are you not in the studio? Yeah, that's one. Two, I think radio is going to stand the test of time because of its reach. Like, if you're to go the direction of newspaper, for example, you'll have to deal with the distribution apart from the cost associated with the paper that you just pointed out.
Mm.
Yeah. How do you then get this paper that you're printing in Windhoek to reach Tivundu? That's another just logistical nightmare that you'll have to look at. But for radio, for the most part, the consumer plays in their own distribution, because all they just have to do is have a smartphone in case of Eagle FM, for example. Mm. Then you can just, advise them to download the app or just to use conventional radio, and they'll be listening to your waves. A newspaper, on the other hand, congratulations, you've printed it out in Windhoek. Now, how do you get it to Tivundu?
Firstly, you can get it there, Helmut.
Yeah.
The second scenario is ultimately, will it be bought?
That's also a million-dollar question.
That's the other million-dollar question. Now, yes, we can talk about the particular problem scenarios, let's say the economic scenarios, but I actually also want to take you back to the point that you started on, the expression of freedom discussion,
yeah,
which is obviously the point also linked to the Rwandan genocide, specifically the ugly example.
Unregulated.
Yeah, what
freedom
happens?
Of expression.
What
yeah.
happens?
It turns out there is such thing as a bad, how do I put this? Bad. I don't want to call it freedom of expression because that's just abuse of it.
Do you want to say malafide actors?
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know from your legal terms, those that have not studied law in any way or manner, it's a Latin term meaning bad faith actor.
Yeah, that's where you get the word malicious. Basically.
Yeah. So mala fide, bad faith. Bona fide is good faith. So bad faith actors, for example, would be like that Rwandan radio station who literally just operated for a year.
Yeah.
But if you read, like on that Wikipedia entry, the presenters, they had five core presenters, Hamid. Each and every one came and did the same thing.
Which is basically, tribal division topic based.
No, hate crimes. Just spouting hate in every particular.
Hate after hate. And the state was okay with that?
But you can obviously see if there's a lack of regulation.
Yeah.
Now, in this particular media report, looking at Namibia's landscape and media, Namibia's ecosystem, Namibia starts from a colonization, censorship, state involvement template, which still exists till this day.
The censorship or the involvement?
Both.
Oh, yeah.
Both. The first radio station in the historical context of that report is a state radio station that was set up with the assistance, which is now the SABC, but with the assistance of the SABC. So it was a state radio station set up by another state radio station in Namibia.
Yeah.
So we can obviously understand specifically why we still have the large state presence
in the media space.
In the media space in the country. But here's where expression of freedom discussions get now the balancing act. And this is also where people have to understand. I'm not here to advocate for you who believes you want to go and, insult people's parents and ancestors into kingdom come. That's your business. That's your specific. If you're a character like that, guys, I can be Catholic for a second for you, feel bad for you, and then just leave you to the beasts. The beasts will, they will deal with you.
Yeah.
So when we obviously think about the discussion of freedom of expression is what feeds creative arts. It feeds, the music we've listened to. It feeds the national discourse. That's why I love the discussion about discourse. That's why I love what podcasts are doing. Podcasts are having conversations. That's what I like, Helmut, what you and I, we are doing, and mm-hmm. what obviously also our employer, Eagle FM, is doing. We have conversations, and we attract listeners through the calling in sessions that they can participate in,
mm-hmm.
call in, engage with us. And what is your perspective? Here's the worst scenario that I've ever seen specifically when freedom of expression is not understood in its fullest. I'm giving the same example, but in two different scenarios.
Yeah.
When I did my second year for my journalism degree there at NUST, I sat in my media theory or my media law class, and this is obviously where we now have to delve into the expression of freedom discussion, and that's literally the first part of the class. That was the first part of the first few weeks that you had to learn. We had two lecturers. One lecturer shows up for like, how do you go about reporting on, let's say, a crime event? And how do you go about report? And the other one was about understanding the legal terminology and the legal implications of media actions. So now the second part meant we had a lecturer from the law department of the university mm-hmm. present those lessons. So it was a lessons. It was literally one course split into two parts in the same semester. So when it was the time of the legal lecturer in that one scenario, and we're now in we're in the discussion of privacy, libel, defamation, that section specifically. And she explains a scenario and cites the acts, just like this report also cites certain acts and certain legislations. And then she gives an example. And then one of the girls in the front, now obviously sometimes, you know, your fellow classmates, you can forgive them for, in some cases, for their, like, you know, immaturity. So the one girl here in the front desk says, "But ma'am, what if the person didn't mean it?"
Then the what?
Yeah, literally. They love, you know, Namibians, we love giving such weird examples that actually hold no water. It can't even walk on water, for that matter. It can't even be like a philosophic position that takes the thinking to a new level. Near.
But they didn't mean it.
They didn't mean it, but you already committed the act. So, the lecturer goes like, "Listen, this is the law. It's in black and white. We don't interpret. In the law, realm of the law,
yeah.
You don't interpret the law.
You leave that to the courts.
You leave that to the courts. You, yeah. Here, in the WhatsApp qualified scenario of life.
We don't.
That never gets here.
Yeah.
That's why they are clearly divided. Then the girlie tried to put up a defense for her previous answer by saying, "But ma'am, what if this situation..." And then the lecturer just cut her short and said, "Listen, I'll tell you again. You don't reinterpret the law. Because you don't reinterpret the Constitution. You don't reinterpret an act or law that we just inherited from our pre-independence era." Argument was shut down right there. Then, a different scenario. This different scenario is a radio station that I watch on YouTube.
Yeah.
LBC. It's full name stands for Leading Britain's Conversation, as they try to say it. So one of their presenters, one of their famous legacy British presenters, Ian Dale, has, regarding this Iran, US discussion now,
yeah.
Literally when the fight broke out, mm-hmm. Last week. So the fight broke out the week before, so in last week they had this particular exchange. So Ian has on his desk, on his show, a guest speaker, which is an expert guest, which is a law professor from the University of Oxford, but they're in London, at one of their stations in London, at one of their, you know, branches of Oxford in London.
Yeah.
And Ian starts the question off with the lecturer, And the guy is a Greek guy, this lecturer. He goes like, "Professor, can you tell us, is this war on Iran illegal or not illegal?" And this is where I actually love it when law professors.
Yeah.
I don't listen to lawyers. I listen to law professors. I listen to law professors. Do you know why?
Yeah.
They will tell you straight up, this is the law.
This is what it says.
This is what it says. Read it. These are the various court cases that have taken place under this particular law and its various affiliated provisions. This is what you've got to study. And when you go look at law, Helmut, law is a straightforward system. It's a predictable system. It's not religion. It's not because the pastor feels sorry for you. There's a judge. You get a lawyer. That party gets a lawyer if it's a civil case. If you committed a crime against the state,
and present their sides.
there's a state lawyer. You get represented by another lawyer, which actually means you are not the mechanic of your own accident. You can't be the insurance agent, the recovery agent, the tow-in truck, and also the police of your own accident.
That's taking monopoly to a whole another level.
You can't be that. Now, Ian Dale asks the professor. Professor, in your opinion, is this war legal or not? And that guy starts off primarily from what is his profession, from the law, which literally governs the whole world. No, under international law, the U.S. is committing an international crime, which has certain particular open-ended, supposed or vague provisions for how to deal with countries that instigate a war. Yeah. Without informing the Security Council or the General Assembly and so on and so forth, which Donald Trump has not done.
Donald Trump did not even inform Congress.
Exactly.
Let alone the UN Security Council.
Exactly. Now, here's what the lawyer then said. Ian Dale then goes and hammers on the same point, whether it's legal or not. Yeah, but what if Donald Trump or the United States decides to send a letter after they started the fight with Iran? And the professor hits on the same point and says, "Listen, Ian, this is the law. You cannot ask for my opinion to reinterpret the same English sentence in a different manner. This is it. It is straightforward. The actions that were supposed to exist that the law looks for was, did the U.S. write a letter of intent to say they are going to start this fight on Iran?
Yeah.
There is no proof." And he literally says it. At that time or interval of last week, Wednesday, there was no proof of a letter of intent informing the Security Council and the other General Assembly nations that the U.S. is going to conduct this war. It's like a way of saying, "I'm informing you, Helmut, I'm going to beat you up at the gate at 5 o'clock. But you also have to say, I'm not going to tell Matthias, who was here before us, I'm going to tell David that does the EMS, this fight is going to go down, just so that you guys know, this fight is happening."
Okay, I can think, just at the top of my head, I can think of one reason why Trump did not bother to go to take that, that discussion to the UN Security Council. Because at the end of the day, it has to be voted on.
And it would have been vetoed by Russia.
Exactly.
And by China.
And he knew that because China.
And by France. And by the UK.
The UK, because they're already right now going like, "What the heck are you doing?" Because clearly they would have stood in that council and gone like, "Are you nuts?"
But it's actually a playbook that a professor, a Canadian professor, Jiang, this professor I've been talking about recently. Yeah. Who studies game theory. He literally predicted this in 2024. Trump is going to pick a fight with Iran. It came to fruition. Trump was the reason for this whole fight. Him and Netanyahu. But anyway, we're sidetracking a situation. Do you know what was the biggest concern?
Yeah.
You could immediately see in a seasoned journalist, radio presenter like Ian Dale, who's based in England. He doesn't know where Dwight is here in Windhoek.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. But I could analyze a fellow media representative from just that 10-minute discussion with that academic. The academic knew his work. Mm-hmm. Ian Dale didn't know his work. Ian Dale was asking the academic to reinterpret something that the academic has no power to do.
Like, look, I am a professor, but I'm not in court practicing or applying the law. Therefore, the interpretation is going to be done there. I'll just show you what it says.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. Our law system, the world's law system,
yeah,
is similar to what I think Namibia and South Africa has. Meaning, we don't have a jury.
You come throw
your arguments. You come present the case. You file the case. You come throw your arguments. Mm. There would be a bench of judges who then take those arguments.
I don't know who came up with that whole jury system, because I'm just sitting here going...
It's the British, because the British also have a jury system. The British also has a jury system.
The
Americans have a jury system.
The Americans have a jury
now,
system.
Now, if you go and look at like countries like a China and a Japan, mm-hmm, where no person that was accused of the crime has ever won a case. Let me say this again, Helmut. No person who was accused of a crime in a country like Japan, let's just take Japan, because mm-hmm, I remember the Carlos Ghosn scenario, the former Nissan CEO, the guy that got smuggled out in the coffin.
Like, no one?
Carlos Ghosn was told in jail, bruh, you are stuck in this country, which has 100% conviction rate. Carlos Ghosn is a Libyan from Libya, the most unstable country that you could possibly think about in the world. Libya, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Just, no, not Libya, sorry. Sorry, Libya. Lebanon. He's a Lebanese. Carlos.
On the instability, I would have gone with Libya, but go on.
No. Libya was actually stable.
Oh, at the time.
Yeah. It was literally after Gaddafi had passed away.
Yeah.
But Lebanon has not been stable since the 1970s. Yeah. Since, what's that guy from the Palestinian Liberation Front? You remember that guy? The guy with the old guy with the gray beard?
Yeah.
Yasser Arafat?
Yeah, Yasser Arafat.
Lebanon has never been stable since the 1970s because of Yasser Arafat and Hezbollah.
100% conviction rate.
Japan.
Are they all?
China. South Korea. The Indochina countries have 100% conviction. Do you know who's the worst, Helmut? Singapore has 100% conviction. If you are accused of a crime, you will lose. You will lose.
So even if you are accused, as in you are framed, you are cooked.
How? You will need to prove the framing, Helmut. Because for most of those Asian countries that I referenced,
yeah,
they believe the system from the police,
yeah,
to the court is waterproof. If you say that there's something wrong with the system, that mm-hmm, the police can't do their job correctly,
mm-hmm,
what are you trying to say? So you're cooked. You're not even cooked. You're deep fried. Huh? You're deep fried.
But 100% conviction rate is nuts.
You're deep fried. Which means don't push the limits. Now, when you look at, you know, what freedom of expression in some cases can look like. Yes, in the UK, which has a history of undermining itself through its media, because you literally have the media is the reason potentially for why the English men's football team, the Three Lions, would continuously not perform at a World Cup, because they would either run a sting, the media would run a sting on the football team, like they would call the coach and ask him, yeah, what are your... You know, they would sound like a supposed, what would happen to Sven-Göran Eriksson? The guy that called him, the journalists, said he was he was faking that he was a football agent. And then he asked perspectives about players.
Yeah.
In Sven-Göran Eriksson's England men's team. Sven-Göran Eriksson goes and says things. Sven doesn't know that he's being recorded. That journalist takes the recording like that, writes a massive story on one of those tabloids,
man,
in the UK. Sven gets fired. Sven's the morale in the World Cup team is literally through the floor into the earth's core, because Sven, you know, that the journalist came under false pretenses.
Yeah.
Which we've also been trained in Namibia, you don't do. Because as a journalist, you're a professional. As a professional, you uphold professional standards. But we haven't touched on the other things, Hamoud. Let me stop there for now. You know, I've been.
That's one of those parts. The whole, you know, like the way that you're supposed to do things. Like, yeah. For a lot of people, especially one thing that I've experienced is that, and this is interesting enough, mostly when it comes to the public sector, because, well, I don't remember like working in the, I don't work in private offices a lot. So that makes sense. So every time that I, like most, I've actually ran into, I think, 3 or 4.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, the moment I start talking, and I, interesting enough, run into a few fans, and which is actually a good thing. And they, you know, they more often in a joking way, like start asking, "You're not here to record, to secretly record us, are you?" So now I have to frequently tell them, "Guys, even if I wanted to do that."
Who said so?
Yeah.
Our colleagues.
No.
Who?
They're just a few public offices.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because they know you.
Yeah. You're not here to secretly record us. I'm like, yeah, okay, first of all, no. Two, even if I did that recording, it would be useless.
Secondly,
yeah,
here's
I would get into trouble.
Here's the worst part, Helmut, that many journalists don't do in this country, which is technically something that can be thrown out by a court if the journalist gets taken to court.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never asked for consent of recording people, yeah. You can say, yeah, but it's in a public space. I still need permission from the person standing there.
Yeah.
Unless the person is the president, and this is
they're
the
giving a press conference.
You know, or the president and entourage is walking somewhere. Sure, as media, I can whip out the, you know, smartphone, go like, who's Ulegatan? But if it's Joe Slow just there on the pavement, no. Me pulling out my phone to Joe Slow's face. Joe Slow would be like, bruh.
What the heck are you doing?
I know my privacy rights. Even though I'm standing on a public spot. What are you doing? Did you ask permission? Yes or no? So that would be the third scenario. To also
consent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you are now basically in someone's privacy territory.
Yeah.
Now, the part I pointed out earlier about how I did not actually predict or get the picture of just how broad the threats, like the angles that the threat to Namibia's media space could come from, because I was I was very narrow-minded in the sense that I was just thinking about it in terms of mis and disinformation.
Mm.
Until the report, just from the table of contents, is basically laying down, some of the, the directions that the threats have been observed to be coming from. You're looking at, the first one there is legal and regulatory threats.
Yeah.
That's one direction the media freedom threats can come from. Actually, is coming from, and political and institutional threats, and economic and ownership threats. Now that I did not see, I was like, okay, ownership, maybe it's not a big deal, until seemingly monopolistic pictures were drawn. That's like, oh, actually, this makes sense. now, the one that I also did not see, but then I was not surprised to run into it is the digital and technological threats, because that one there now spells a lot of mis and disinformation.
Mm.
Yeah, and you have societal and extra legal threats. And that, to me, speaks more into interpretation. This is one of those reasons why I really like civil society organizations, and civil society organizations, especially when it comes to to pushing the knowledge of civic education, because I think we have sang the song of human rights a lot.
Mm.
Because, I can imagine those, the people that work in the security cluster must be tired of hearing people, start yapping things like, well, I know my rights. But here's the thing. You have rights, yeah. And for the most part, I don't blame the large public. And I'm saying for the most part, not 100%, but I do blame, because sometimes it's important to basically get this information for yourself. It's important to understand that rights comes with responsibilities. Like the Canadian psychologist John Peterson puts it, that you have rights and I have rights. Now, your rights are only, what sustains your rights is if I know my responsibilities. You have a right to own property, and I have a responsibility not to damage that property. So your rights are my responsibility. My rights are your responsibilities.
ShopRite's Price Rounddown is here for 1 week only, where saving is winning. Save up to 40% on homeware, small appliances, outdoor and groceries. Like 24-liter Essentials mini oven, only 900 Namibian dollars. And 470 mils freehand colored base can-shaped glass for only 15 Namibian dollars each. Offers valid until 15 March 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. So we are 29 minutes left to the hour of six. So rights and responsibilities are run parallel to one another. You can't if everyone only had rights and no responsibilities, there would be no rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you take responsibilities out of the equation, no one is going to have rights, because you will be telling me you have the right to life, but I will be having a panga to try to take your life, because you have the right to life. And therefore, I have the responsibility not to take your life. You have the right to have a healthy body, and I have the responsibility not to harm you. You have the right to own property, and I have the responsibility not to damage your property.
Mm.
And the same then goes for me. I have the right to be, to have a healthy body, to own property, and all the, and have all those things. So then you have the responsibility to make sure that you don't damage my property. So it's, it goes both ways. You can't have one without the other. But we have glued this whole idea in our minds, for especially, this is very common, especially among the youth, that everything is about, it's my right.
Mm.
Yeah, you also have responsibilities. But, and also for the most part, when we're talking about civic education, I swear for the most part, we teach rights like they are some types of divine message that's going to take someone to some eternal, place somewhere. But, I think it would come a long way if we just emphasized on responsibilities the same way that we do on rights.
But here's the question, Hamoud. That particular sentence that you're making, because it brings up a memory that I of a particular conversation I encountered there in China last year. So the perspective we take education to, what are we trying to achieve? Because what no one has spoken about, but what you have heard in bit part sometimes, let's say from women's safety in greater public, everyday safety overall for everyday Namibians with regards to like burglaries, robberies, basic and in some cases also like violent crimes in terms of, the asset forfeiture department guys are just a little bit too heavy-handed when they interact or when they come in contact with a victim. And people ask the questions, what is the police doing? And, those particular perspectives. But what conversation point, which is sort of like a light bulb moment that I heard from my other, the fellow Namibians in our team, because I was almost the only guy in the team. And so the Namibian ladies asked our guide, who is literally from the Foreign Affairs Office of the Jiangxi province. From the province, the provincial authority. They've got a Foreign Affairs Department. And the guide, obviously, the person, the representative from there is a lady. And the Namibians now asked the lady, because this was now woman-to-woman conversations, and Dwight is not the only guy. I'm looking there at skyscrapers and just minding my business, observing the blue number plates and the green number plates going in the streets up and down.
Yeah.
I'm observing the geography more than paying attention. And then I heard the Namibians ask our guide, how does the school system work here in China? What do students start with from grade one? What do they learn on school? The lady responded, our guide, by saying those first 2 years on school, so we're talking about grade zero, grade one, grade two, the children are taught ethics and the constitution, ethics and morals. Just that, besides the other things like teaching basic counting and writing skills.
Yeah.
But the kids are taught ethics and morals. Meaning you are being taught from a young age how to be a good-mannered person and yeah. to understand the laws and certain things in terms of where you are living in as a human. And then the other knowledge basis builds up from there.
So ethics and morals in the constitution, those are like your foundation, the where then you build all other,
yeah.
basically all disciplines that everyone decides to take, for example, specialize into.
Yeah. Now, it's the same particular thing, for example, how you also can try and look at how, for example, where the Japanese are most applauded for their good-manneredness, meaning you will never find something like a high school, like a school, like a general worker cleaning a school in Japan.
No.
Because the school kids clean the school.
Yeah.
Now, I've recently come to be slightly annoyed because we can obviously see in Namibia, certain things cannot be carried by the schools anymore because obviously the ministries don't understand what they're doing by saying that you should not pay a certain amount of fee schools to the well-being of the school premises, because we can now also now agree Ministry of Works has also a pretty big portfolio on its hands,
yeah.
managing public school facilities as well, alongside all other public infrastructure and all other public installations. So how I understood on high school was that fee that we used to pay in the 90s to the school was meant for the well-being of the premises. The new age parents today, you can literally see it's a relationship of I want without looking after the institution that's literally teaching and, you know, training my child. Now, the relationship then looks very lopsided. Why does it look lopsided? Because there is this extracting behavior by parents, but the parents that I saw when I was a kid on school, and the communities was a scenario of putting back to the school, maintaining the school. If the principal made an appeal every day, let's say on an assembly, at one of the assemblies during the year, can one of your parents please, whoever has accessibility or is willing to donate fertilizer for the school's sports pitches?
Yeah.
It happens. It happens. Could we have a fundraising event to repaint the school? It happens. Was there school bazaars? It happens. But go look at the non-supportiveness that comes from Namibian communities today who are not willing to support schools, especially public schools, with the same mentality that I saw back in the 90s. Helmut, you will have to literally go and firstly kill an alligator to show me that before I see it today, because I don't see it anymore. Now, the reason why I throw up that particular scenario was when we look at the scenarios in terms of how we approach rights, freedom of expression, discussions of that nature, it's you have to look at what is the core issue that is being sort of like debated.
Yeah.
Is it that you have the right to make malicious claims about someone's character on a WhatsApp group, and that person is also on the same WhatsApp group like you, like what happened most back in the COVID era with the firstly with the former first lady, and then secondly with the influencer, what was her name, Betty Davis, that lady that literally both ladies, the former first lady,
Miss Namibia last year went through it.
Miss Namibia as well, but that was, okay, there was no court case that popped up from that.
Oh, yeah.
There was no court case. The two examples I'm referencing, the two references I have was literally that the one was a politician that made that particular error of the malicious claims on a WhatsApp group, and the second one was the other politician that made the same comments on a WhatsApp group with regards to the character of the former first lady, Monica Geingos. So, right there, you're given clear-cut examples of how your freedom of expression is unrestricted, is not unrestricted.
Yeah.
Because you have a responsibility to know and take care what you're saying and over what communication medium. So, yeah, long way of saying get to that particular example, guys. But, yeah, that is the gist of the discussion.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's also emphasized in the cybercrime bill. That one is more of the sharing of content part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's private information, you just get it and you're like, oh my God, this is juicy. Just send it to any group and then you let everything go wild from there. When that law is passed.
But how can they prove that, Hamoud?
People are, that's what I was going to. I'll just be looking forward to how you will do an investigation on WhatsApp. Like who forwarded to who first, and are you going to be added to that group? And I think I'm part of like 2-3 WhatsApp groups, and I don't know if they say, you know, if there's a police officer in that group, even if there was a one, I don't think I would know. I think we are this close to getting a WhatsApp police.
But we don't have it yet. The UK has one. They lock you up for weird social media comments, which means that the UK government is obviously has already a social media monitoring and surveillance technology.
Look, if I want to go, if I want to go to jail, it better be something. I don't want to go to jail for forwarding a message.
But that's what's currently happening in the UK. That's literally what's happening in the UK.
Going to jail because you wrote a comment.
And it's a pathway, obviously, that this report also highlights, you know, because, for example, like we have callers that can talk about, let's say, community issues or issues that literally is a bone of contention wherever they find themselves, or they seek, or they're adding their particular, you know, pepper and salt and turmeric and cinnamon to a specific conversation point. That they obviously probably say something in error. And now that particular surveillance legislation now means that CRAM firstly penalizes us.
Yeah.
Then CRAM then activates one or other type of surveillance technology mechanism to go after the caller, meaning accessing calling logs that called in here on our station number. And now the radio station and the caller, which could be like a faithful stakeholder, highly valued stakeholder as an audience member, is now also penalized for expressing and participating in a conversation that probably didn't even have any malicious scenario in it, but it positioned a conversation point that, you know, was sort of like on neutral ground.
Look, if there's one thing that we have learned from the, especially one very easy piece of legislation that you can easily, that you can point at in Namibia that goes to show that there is such a thing as overregulation, is the public procurement bill. There is such a thing as overregulation because a lot of people now in the public sector, they want to do their job, but they have to follow these very long and complicated methods, which is making it very sluggish. And at the end of the year, by the time that they, you know, they try to get all the bits and pieces in place to basically, you know, execute certain projects, we are already in October, meet a budget review, and everything is reshuffled, and we're back to square one.
Yeah.
And at the end
December is holiday month.
It's holiday month.
Because we know no government office will do anything in December. January is literally half a month. February, they've got to submit all paperwork.
Yeah.
And then March, because in February, the budget has to be tabled.
Yeah. So now that you know that overregulation that's being basically being shown by the Public Procurement Act, it's something that's I think so important and very it's so important to pay attention to it, especially if you are looking at an example of overregulation. The Minister of Finance in a budget speech just also emphasized the reasons behind the amendments of the Public Procurement Bill. The regulations are a little too tight.
Yeah.
So, that brings us back to the sweet spot of finding balancing human rights and regulations.
Yeah.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real, just like Vintook beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun podcast and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintook beer, it's that barley, hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintook beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 14 minutes left to the hour of 6. This is Homerun with Homerun and Dwight. This Homerun with Helmut and Dwight. Now I got it.
Homerun with Dwight. Home run and Dwight.
Did I just give myself a nickname?
Your home run now? You shouldn't let production here, Almut.
My wife is so listening to that, and I'm cooked.
Yeah. So where you highlighted?
There is such a thing as over regulation. Now, speaking of over regulation. Now, the Public Procurement Act is one very easy example it's the first thing that always comes to my head when it comes to, whenever I think about an example of over-regulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for the lawmakers, on the other hand, that's also regulating the, the media landscape, they have to balance, giving you and I the freedom to express ourselves and also the media operators basically to run, to run their programs or to run their things, and also ensuring that, it's regulated. So you have to balance regulating and allowing. Yes, you can do this and this and this, but this is where we draw the line, because we don't want to end up with what's that radio station's name? We don't want to end up with a
radio television
with a
libre de whatever RTML.
RTML.
Yeah.
I can't believe someone just woke up and decided, you know what? But we just come up with a radio station that will just spew hate crime after hate crime after hate crime.
But you know who was the most prominent backer of that radio station?
Who's that?
It was a politician. He had a show on air. He was one of the main five antagonists in the spewing of hate language.
I came across a video on social media, I think there's 2-3 days ago, of someone that said that, look, I know that to some degree it's easy to, it's true that hate is taught.
Mm.
But you have got to get to the age where you are just grown up enough to know that this is a lot of crap.
It's also a scenario, Helmut, specifically if you look at how you approach mending certain wounds in your society.
Yeah.
Namibia has such a particular scenario currently ongoing, which is our colonial history.
Yeah.
The genocide discussion. I just came from the same platform at that, where that circular economy discussion was taking place. A side event, the coffee break in between. I met a guy there that I met at other functions as well, who said, yeah, I'm going to run for president. I'm like, okay, let me hear now this soap story.
Boy.
Let me hear the soap maker story or this cake baking story now. When I speak, you know, people will listen. I'm like, what?
You don't realize it takes, he takes more than that to be president.
He went from that first sentence to this sentence with nothing, filling in with nothing in between. So I don't know where he is in his particular perspective. So I ask him, why do you say this? You know, when I speak, Dwight, people will listen to me. And then you people will hear me. I'm like, what is this guy on?
I think he should be looking into being an influencer, not president.
I left it right there. Because he's also an entrepreneur.
You see, that's why I don't go out. Because I can easily get punched in the face.
He's also an entrepreneur. You know, but when you try and have like serious conversations, because he tries to speak of issues in the country. Mm-hmm. But I give him the answer. That's the same answer I give everyone, you know, since last year into this year. It's the answer is that I can see there's a disconnect between Comas and Erongo and the other regions of this country.
Yeah.
What is Comas and Erongo getting right? What did they get right? Now, what are the other regions not doing? What are they focusing on? Because the basics discussion, Helmut, when we obviously also talk about the broader discourse in this country, is also how the discourse is handled. How do you handle the discourse? How is the conversation taking place? You know, I've heard so many horror stories of what happens on the Oshirero language medium radio stations, specifically when it comes to like the chieftainship and the elections of the chieftainship and factions and even about the genocide discussion. I've heard the horror stories. I know that there are so many Namibians out there that know of the horror stories of what happened, of things that have happened to radio presenters and even journalists.
Because of those subjects.
Because of that subject matter. I even walked into one day in my previous...
So that must be the societal,
threats
that's referenced in the
book. Yeah. I once walked into a conversation where my general manager, this is now in my previous career path, my general manager had walked up to the journalist who wrote an article now this is literally based after the Second Land Conference finished. That 2018.
Yeah.
After the Second Land Conference, now that journalist had been at the Second Land Conference, which was at the country club, and had observed some of the main speeches and talking points. The general man, who was my immediate boss at the time, had decided to walk up to the journalist in the newsroom and tell the journalist, listen, the perspective you are writing about doesn't feed into the narrative that he wanted the journalist to drive. But the thing is, the journalist doesn't report to him as the general manager. The journalist reports to a managing editor or a chief editor. And the journalist was like, "Brah, what's your issue?
I'm not reporting to you.
I don't report to you. This is the particular angle we that the newsroom agreed upon.
In other words, my supervisor is okay with it, but
I don't have to care about your opinion." And that I stood there for like 5 minutes observing this discussion because I like observing certain interactions of humans. And I was like, what's the GM going on about? At that stage, Dwight was like domkop about the genocide discussion. I knew my family's history.
Yeah.
But the broader narrative, Dwight was domkop. I was just like, you know what? Let me just go, and do my work on another space. Then the moment I started entering into this conversation from 2019 onwards, I started realizing, okay, I understood that particular perspective. The land discussion, interviews I've done here on Eagle FM as well, also broadens my mindset in certain scenarios. And then you start realizing that there are narratives taking place, Helmut, that literally wish to circumvent for own benefit scenarios.
That's painful.
And it always takes place. Now, there's also, when literally state functions also work against the media landscape, which is the lovely example listed in the report regarding that court case between the Central Intelligence Services and the now defunct Patriot publication that existed here in Namibia, in Windhoek, regarding, the subject matter at hand, where the courts literally also told the Central Intelligence Service, listen, brah, the reason you are giving to throw this to throw the case out and also to literally have the case in camera, I suspect?
Yeah, and that's in private.
Which is in private?
Yeah. There's the Secret Service guys, like, you know, when it comes to Secret Service, you can almost expect the in camera request because
there's a difference between
the name of national security.
There's a difference between Secret Service and
intelligence
service.
Intelligence service.
There's a difference.
The Secret Service, those are for the those are for the
president.
For the president.
Yeah. For the vice president. And
Secret Service.
Yeah. an intelligence service is the country.
Aren't they like both secret?
Well, the one.
Yeah,
is...
I think they should switch names because the intelligence guys are the most secret organizations you'll ever find.
We must now live in a world most now where we know each other's faces, but we don't know most. So,
yeah,
I love that example specifically being cited there because, in many cases, Helmut, the way that surveillance and state surveillance can also take place in a scenario was like through the SIM card registration example.
Yeah.
And that is the most obvious of the state literally working, firstly, not just against media, possibly, but also against the conversation of the whole country. Because we don't have a data protection legislation. We have to wait on a UN convention about cybersecurity. We go and seek advice from Kenyan lawmakers about Namibian laws. The Kenyan constitution is not the Namibian constitution. I'll say this again. The Kenyan constitution is not the Namibian constitution. The UN convention on cybersecurity is not the Namibian constitution.
Yeah.
And that's one of the that's one of the most startling things. Now, I have to share here also, Helmut, that I did not share back in the cybersecurity conversation we had in last month, that I was slightly disappointed by the response that I got because the executive director of MICT at the time that answered my question, who was also present, Madam Linda Nakale, she answered the perspective from the Communication Act. But the question at hand that many government officials cannot answer is whether or not they understand the Namibian constitution. Are they working to uphold the Namibian constitution, which enshrines most of our basic rights, or are they working to literally just say, no, we've got this act. This is the act, this particular act that exists here. We live and breathe by this act. This act is the lay of the land, is boss. This act is boss. And then you go find things like, for example, what this report highlights is that there's like a pre-independence law there. That court case of the Central Intelligence Service and the Patriot guys, the court case, that the Central Intelligence Agency brought up as an act, as a defense in that court case, which the judges obviously went and said, Nehman,
what
are you guys busy with? Your defense doesn't work. But this act is still in existence. It's still functioning because we inherited all this legislation and no one is challenging these old laws and acts. Which also has a bearing and a direct influence like that discussion about the company guy that wrote the open letter that we had in our e-paper. The seaweed company at Ludritz, remember?
Yeah.
About the process and that the process had lapsed and that the process required... He had an appeal. Yeah, but he had the right to appeal between when he got the rejection from that particular directorate in the Ministry of Agriculture, in the Ministry of Agriculture, and that the minister at the time had to respond. Now, at that stage, you and I could point to a time frame that was problematic, being that the minister in question was the minister that currently was removed from his position. Because of S crime allegations.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that regard, the process already would have failed in its own right, which highlighted, a scenario in terms of, do civil servants actually understand the work that they've got to do? The work that they are responsible for when dealing with us, the Namibian public. But we've got an ad break, guys.
ShopRite's Price Round Down is here for 1 week only, where saving is winning. Save up to 40% on homeware, small appliances, outdoor and groceries.
like 20-liter Essentials black or white manual microwave oven, only $800 Namibian each, and 12-piece Spring Flower or Finesse white dinner set for only $199 Namibian per set. Offers valid until 15 March 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
I'm really trying to keep a straight face, but okay.
No, don't worry. As Namibians, we voluntarily gave our SIM cards and our IDs for a SIM card.
Like the things when it comes to the use of technology, when it comes to how technology is obviously going to, it has already begun threatening the state of democracy. Hence, the Antonio Guterres, worries of the 2026 priorities of the transfer of power from governments to tech companies. The thing is, all this, all the worries that we have that we have relating to media freedom.
Yeah.
These are symptoms, or more like cascading effects, coming out of the threats to democracy.
But it's like, do you have an X account?
Yeah.
Have you seen how Elon Musk's posts pop up, and you don't even follow the guy?
Yeah.
Have you seen the racist jabs and jibes he makes? The sometimes anti-Islamic look. We all have our own particular opinions about various groups and religions across the world. Not everyone is, a hippie. We are not hippies. We don't love everybody. But there's something known as have like a common decency for the next human. But homeboy, literally, Elon Musk bought that platform. And it's literally turning out to be a pet project for him.
Right wing.
Well, Hamoud, you can be right wing. I'm also right wing. You have a conservativeness to you. Yeah. I also have a conservativeness to me.
Yeah.
The downside is the left wing people, the supposed left wing people, are now looking even more right conservative and just as right wing. So, when we use the terminologies in Africa of the right wing, left wing, it doesn't even hold water anymore in Europe, because the proof has been shown in the pudding that what you now see is like the political actors in those in Europe and North America try to put up these polar opposite discussions of right wing, left wing, but then they can't even, in many cases, they actually reinforce each other's positions.
You know what's worse about that? Last year, when X added a feature to X that showed where an account was being run from, where it was created from, a lot of people, a lot of accounts, that especially those ones that are into pushing more like right-wing ideologies, in the U.S., those accounts were pinging out of Bangladesh, Nigeria, most parts of Asia. Now, everyone also, and then people, and most of them were pinging out of the Middle East. Mm. I was like, okay, so how is someone that's very, pro this political party in this country running this account from halfway across the planet? Now, and then you realize that a lot of these people, first of all, a lot of these people are just paid to run these accounts. Mm. In other words, they don't believe a word out of the things that they are tweeting.
Mm.
They're just doing it because they are being paid to do that.
Mm.
Now, and then you have your ordinary consumers that are just reading through this and then, you know, swallowing it whole.
Yeah.
But the person that posted that does not believe a word out of it. Actually, they don't even, they're not doing that because they side with that ideology. They're doing that because they're being, literally being paid to do it.
Yeah.
So it's a responsibility then, especially when it comes to the, you know, to media, it's a responsibility of both the consumer and the lawmaker to meet each other, to meet each other halfway. As a lawmaker, they have responsibility to make these legislations that does not trample over human rights of the people, especially with regards to the freedom of speech.
Mm.
And the user now, the freedom of speech practitioner, know that your rights comes with the responsibilities. You have rights to speak, but not rights to insult someone because they're going to knock your teeth out.
You technically have that right also to insult Hamoud, but it's obviously how it's done.
It's one that comes with the risk of you not eating maize and meat for the next 10 years, or actually for the rest of your life, if your teeth gets knocked out.
Yeah, that's why I said there's a lot of risks associated to said particular actions.
Yeah.
But obviously, guys, we've appropriated. How much time did we appropriate from David? David, 6 minutes. You know, that's a record so far. Net David, 6 minutes. I mean, we can always do our best. You know, we can bring it down to literally 6 o'clock on the dot. But yeah, on that note, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening. Stay tuned for David and the Business and Economic segment. We'll see each other again tomorrow.
Stay safe.